Welcome back. This is episode 12 of the Fostering Financial Victories podcast. Today, we are joined by special guests, Rand and Stacy Boffman. So we are going to have an interesting conversation. So Rand, you were on the show a couple weeks ago talking about the stock market. Today's going to be a little bit different. So we're going to talk about marriage and money. Could be an uncomfortable conversation for a lot of people. I don't think it will be for you guys. but we're going to talk about why is it so hard for couples to discuss money and finances in general. It's kind of like one of those taboo items that people typically avoid the conversation. So, again, thanks for joining us. Give us a little bit of background on you guys. So, how long have you been married? Kids, what ages? Like, just go.
Yeah, so we met in 2011, and we got married in 2014, and we have one little boy, Trey. He's about to turn two. I usually don't have a beard, but I haven't shaved since March 23rd. So we call it the market rally beard. So
it's going strong.
Well, you know, you've got the beard, and I'm pretty sure my hair is going to be out of control.
Yeah.
I'll bring back the mullet pretty soon.
Sorry about the black roots.
Yeah, the mullet's coming back. Barbershops need to open up pretty soon.
Yeah.
All right. So to get into this topic, Rand, you and I, we see a lot of this in our office with client interactions where people talking about money can be a little bit uncomfortable, it can get a little bit odd, and people get a little defensive about it a lot of times. Why do you think that is?
You know, I think from our experience, the reason why it could be defensive is because it is kind of, it can be kind of an emotional conversation. And also depending on what time or what's going on throughout the day when you have that conversation, emotions can be high, and sometimes you can project that when you're having the conversation with your spouse.
What do you think, Stacey?
I think that you accumulate money in two ways that are emotional to begin with. I think you either work really hard for the money that you have, or it's been passed down to you through family or through a gift of some sort that probably has some sort of emotional tie too. So I think you have more of an emotional tie than you may have even realized to whatever income that you have coming in a lot of time. So yeah.
There's always something else attached to it.
Right, yeah. Right.
And the other person may not really understand that from a personal perspective, because if it's an inheritance, like you mentioned that, I didn't think about that part of it, because the inheritance side, if you inherit something from a grandparent, well, that's like almost like your only tie to them.
Right.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Okay, so when you guys got married and started dating and all this, did you ever talk about money pre-getting married?
We did. So Brandon and I actually, about maybe 6 months before we actually got engaged, we might be kind of weird, I don't know if this is weird or not, but we thought it was good. We ended up going through kind of like a pre-engagement questionnaire that we would talk about, and every Thursday night we would go and have wine, and we would kind of pop around and have cocktail hour, and then we would basically go through these questions. I think it was sort of a security thing for both of us. We're both planners, we're both very logical, we both think long term, but we also came, I grew up in Colorado, he grew up here, so we came from different places, and I think we both realized that it was really important for us to be on the same page with the biggest things in life, even before we got engaged. So we started talking about it pretty early.
So I think that's probably one of the big takeaways for a lot of people, is that they avoid that conversation during the dating phase, and then when you get married, you really don't know what the other person thinks about it.
Right.
So I've seen that personally with a lot of clients, that their first conversation about money was after they got married.
Yeah.
That makes it a little bit more difficult.
Yeah. I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah. So the big question that I always get from a planner's perspective when couples are getting married, what do we do with personal accounts? Because you go from an individual having their own accounts to now you've got the marriage in there. Do you join accounts? Do you not? If you do, how do you do it? What did you guys do?
So I think it goes back to having that open dialogue and conversation, pre-engagement, during engagement, et cetera. So when we got married, we knew when we got married that we both felt comfortable doing joint accounts, combining everything into a joint account. And but if we didn't have that conversation, and let's say I had broached the subject of, hey, we should combine everything, but Stacy didn't want to combine everything, then that could get awkward, right? And so definitely, I think we had kind of taken that bullet out of the gun with those conversations before we even got engaged.
And that kind of goes back to your original question of the emotional ties to money. I think some people are comfortable combining those things and some people aren't. For Rand and I, we felt from a personal standpoint that marriage is a total union of everything that we have, and we wanted to have our entire life, including our finances, combined. So we combine everything, and we have from the very beginning. So that's how we choose to do it.
Yeah. So when you combine your accounts, so my wife and I, we do the same thing. So all accounts have been combined from the day one when we got married. So I don't really know how you make it work if you have separate accounts from a paying bills and all that stuff. But I do know that you have one person in the house that's typically doing the budgeting and doing the controlling of the money. How do you guys approach that? And what have you found to be successful? What have you found to be things that, hey, that didn't really work that well. We probably shouldn't do that again because that created some strife between the two. Maybe that hadn't been an issue. I don't know.
No, no. I would say when we first got married, you know, me being what I do, when we first got married, it was kind of my job to be kind of like the CFO. But the first 6 months of marriage, I didn't realize this would happen, but kind of like in doing financial planning all day long, you come home from work and you kind of want a little bit of a mental break. And so I wasn't as diligent on our personal budget, et cetera, as I was on clients just because of that mental break, wanting that mental break aspect, right? And so it took a couple months to have the conversation, but once I finally had the conversation with Stacy, she's like, oh my gosh, like, I love that stuff. And so it's kind of cool because she's kind of taken over kind of like the day-to-day, I guess, operational aspect of the budget. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of more like big picture wise, like, hey, we should put these dollars here. We should pay this off, et cetera, et cetera. So it's been kind of a good.
Right. I think it works out better for us just because I mean, I was a finance major too, so I like money and I deal with math a lot every day in my job. So I think that helps, but I think for us, just his being able to come home and kind of turn that piece off since it's on all day is a good thing. But also from a logic standpoint, I'm the one who's going to the grocery store and doing pretty much all of our day-to-day household budget spending. So it makes more sense from a logical standpoint for us, for me to handle that just because I'm more on top of it. And I know I have a mental meter a little bit more clear because I'm the one that's doing the transactions.
And you're kind of keeping up with the internal budget too.
Right.
You know what you've spent so far for the month on certain things. So
exactly.
That makes sense.
Exactly.
Okay. So how do you guys go about talking in terms of, I mean, you may do this, you may not. So I didn't ask you this before, but do you guys do a budget on a monthly basis? If you do, how does that look? When do you form it, or is it more of a quarterly thing or an annual thing?
So we do have a budget, and we review that on a quarterly basis, just to kind of say, okay, you know, were the line items on the budget, were they correct, were they off? Do we need to, you know, shift the budget, et cetera? It's kind of interesting, and you can speak to this better.
Yeah.
But when we first started doing the budget, we were more just because it was kind of new. We were more diligent on checking on like a monthly basis. And then once we kind of figured out, okay, this is kind of the range of those items, then we kind of switched to more of a quarterly basis.
Right. And from my standpoint, since I'm kind of handling the day-to-day, when we first got married, I got the Mint app, which really helped me. And we had maybe, I don't know, like 20 categories within our budget for the month. And I was really, really diligent about making sure that all of our transactions were in the right bucket so that we could understand. And honestly, for the first couple of years of marriage, make sure that our budget was on target with what we wanted to do. But at this point, we're familiar enough and we understand our limits enough to where I can kind of take like maybe like three big buckets in my mind and just make sure in my mind that we are where we need to be. But I do think you need to start out with more detail to begin with until you get used to it, for sure. Or at least that helped.
Yeah.
That helped us a lot.
So if you're giving advice to somebody that's just starting out in marriage where they're having this budget conversation, it sounds like you're saying maybe you have it on a monthly basis at first and have some sort of tracking mechanism there to make it easier.
Absolutely.
I mean, you could do the old, you know, the idea of putting it on paper and tracking every receipt every month. That sounds nauseating and it's probably a bit cumbersome, especially as busy as people are, but it sounds like that really helped.
It really did. I mean, it helped us to establish our budget in the first place, too, because it took us a couple months to understand what our household expenses really were too, of course. So,
and I was gonna say too, when you're establishing the budget, I think it's a good idea to, okay, you have your fixed expenses, right? Like, so you have like your mortgage, your rent, the items that no matter what, you know, are fixed expenses. Then from there, look at, okay, what's the savings number, and fit that savings number into the budget as a bill. And so, because you always pay your bills, right? And so fit that savings number in your budget as a bill. And then from there, go to the variable stuff. So the variable stuff being like eating out, vacations.
Your Amazon purchases and things like that may fluctuate.
Yeah.
That's a really good point though. Rand taught me that early, and I'm grateful that he did. We've always built in our savings and in our investment dollars now too as an expense. So that's auto-drafted out of our account, which really helps, because then I'm really visual, and so I have to see in my account where things are, and it confuses me a little bit when we have extra money floating that's supposed to go here or there and it hasn't been transferred yet and things like that. That can get confusing from a budget standpoint. So Rand and I continuously talk and work on if we're moving money to other places on a constant basis, we really utilize auto drafting for that to make sure that it's not confusing from a budget ownership standpoint. So
is there anything that you guys found when you were going through the initial phases of that budgeting discussion and the exercise that was surprising, shocking?
I'm laughing because I remember when we first got married, we're going through the budget, and Stacy's looking at the budget. She's like, "Hey, what is this $190 for cable?" And I was like, "What do you mean it's cable?" Like,
oh yeah, like, that one was not cool. So, I'm not a big spender, so I looked at that and I was like, "What? Why are we paying $200 for cable for?"
You have HBO.
But, I don't know. We got rid of cable.
Yeah, we worked our way.
We still have app things. Yeah. I don't really know how they work, but he has his sports.
So that was one of the big surprises, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was yeah.
Yeah.
So saver versus a spender. You just said that you're more of a saver.
I'm more of a saver, I would say.
I think you are as well.
Rand is too.
I am too, but I will say I know that it has to be an auto draft because I'm not like a big purchase spender, but on some items, I probably spend more than you do, like on things like for us or for, yeah.
Takes me a while to. Execute purchases.
So you're the person that picks it up in the store, walks around for a while, and then thinks about it.
Oh yeah. It takes me a long time to pick things out, especially if it's a bigger item.
Yeah, I'm not good at that either. Okay, so with frivolous spending or discretionary spending, so this is probably where all of the uncomfortableness of this conversation typically comes with married couples, because generally have one person that's a spender, one person that's not. Mm-hmm. And then that creates a little bit of a rub between the two, because the spender thinks, well, this is just a normal lifestyle pattern for me. The saver, it drives them crazy.
Right.
How do you guys talk about what you're going to do discretionarily? And then, you know, I've heard of some people saying, hey, we're going to take X amount of money per month for each person, just go do whatever you want, no questions asked. Yeah. What do y'all do?
So we haven't done that. I think what we've done is by having those, you know, quarterly discussions and knowing, okay, here's where we are now and here's future expenses over the next quarter or next 6 months, like, you know, airplane trips to Colorado or whatever it may be. We know what we can spend, what we can't.
One thing that I think I really enjoy that we do is at least once a year. So we just did it in January. We went to Biltmore and we kind of did like an overnight, and we sat at a wine bar for 4 hours and we literally made this huge list of big expense items that we really want to achieve within the next 2 years. So for us, that's mostly house things. Okay. Our house was built in 1982. It's beautiful. We love it. But there are some things that we really want to do to it. Do we need to? No, but we want to. So we're big also on needs and wants. So as far as discretionary spending, a lot of times we'll come up with lists of needs and wants. It may be big, it may be small. And we kind of approach things that way. So I have a big list of house items on my phone, and kind of what we think that it's going to cost, and that's sort of how we okay. talk about and plan those things.
We do it in stages too. Like stage one is like the one that we want to do the most, right? Mm-hmm. And then stage two is like the next item. Stage three is the next item, and then from there, just having a goal. We think the cost is going to be X. Let's try to save up as much as we can towards that specific cost, and then see where we are. Kind of move from there.
And I will say, kind of going back to the emotional piece of spenders versus savers, I do think we're both savers. Their children's expenses and their home expenses and these things that women may naturally take a little bit more pride in, mm-hmm. having their child look put together, having their home put together, they want it, right?
I can relate to that.
So yep. one thing that we kind of have gotten emotional about, I would say more recently, and I think we've done a really good job of talking through it, but Rand obviously is chief investment officer, keyword being investment. So a lot of our money, goes out to investments. So that's not spending, but that's money that's going out, that's not being put back into immediate things. And I think sometimes that gets a little bit emotional for us. And so that's been a really, really great thing, I think, in the last year that Rand has really sat down with me and taken the time to walk me through his reasoning behind the things that we're doing there and just making sure that I'm comfortable from an emotional standpoint. Because it's hard to see money going out in large amounts like that and not really seeing mm-hmm. anything come out of it right now, you know? And so I think he's done a really good job with that, and it's really helped me to understand that more and walk through it more. And
what'd you think initially when Rand says, "Hey, we're going to put X amount of money in these investment accounts. We're going to go buy this thing." Like, what was your initial thought there?
My initial thought when we first got married.
You know, this is where it's gonna be.
When we first got married was is not my initial thought now, but we have our market investments, yeah. we have some real estate investment, and then we have some investment into business. And so when he first approached me about some of these things, when I first got married, I don't know, I in my mind, because I'm not finance, I'm accounting. So in my mind, I could see the money that we had saved. I could see the money that was in our account. And then there's these big pots that are going places that I didn't really see. And so at first that scared me. It did. It really did. I mean, it scared me. But like I said, he has done an amazing job over the last few years. And every year I feel like I feel more comfortable. And that's why we have such a variety in our investments at this point. And we do have heavier investments in different areas than we did obviously when we first got married, is because he's gotten me to a point where I'm comfortable and I trust him and I'm all in and I agree and I know it's going to be the right thing for our family long term. So
I think it's important too, and is to make sure you're doing the updated plan as a unit, so that way you're both on the same page, because you can see those different investments on the balance sheet and then see, okay, these are how those types of investments plan or are used for the future. So I think that's why it's important to have those planning meetings together as a unit.
All right, so you guys had a child last 2 years. Mm-hmm. So all of these budgets that you got used to doing, how much of an impact did you see? What did it kind of shake you a little bit in terms of your normal routine with budgeting? I know it did, because I've got four of them.
Yeah.
Tell me what your experience was there, and how did you kind of adjust through it?
We're both planners. So we didn't just have Trey and then see what happened. We thought about it at first, and we kind of tried to predict based on the knowledge that we had. It was our first child, so obviously there are things that we couldn't predict. But based on the knowledge that we had of understanding what expenses could be, you know, what would impact us on a day-to-day, how did we need to adjust our budget? And as he's grown, and you know this, as they grow, the expense moves. So when he was a baby, I breastfed for a year, so we didn't have to buy formula or anything like that. So I wouldn't say we really had that much of a financial impact the first year, but then he started eating food, like big food, and he's a big eater. So obviously that affected like our grocery bills. Yeah. You know, they get older, they go through more diaper. Like there's all sorts of things like that that you do have to think through, and then you run out of all of your sweet baby shower clothes that only go up to 12 months, mm-hmm. and you have to purchase all of their wardrobes for all of the seasons.
And they constantly
that's probably the highest expense, I would say, is clothing.
But I think that's why it's important, just to have those conversations, you know, to make sure mm-hmm. we're on the same page. Like, for example, when we did our last conversation, you know, I had no idea how much more expensive it was having like a nanny or a babysitter versus the late stay at a daycare.
Yeah, the corona has impacted us heavily, as I'm sure it has everyone else.
So when that bill hit, I was like, what is this?
But he had that same reaction you had with the investing.
Exactly. Well, and that's what we recently obviously had that conversation. It made us realize that in times like this, when something happens, anything, right now it's COVID, but when something happens that throws off your normal, whoever's in charge of the day-to-day, the communication needs to go up. Because Rand didn't realize, you know, I'm sitting here shoveling out, and unfortunately, we're not getting refunded by our nursery school. So we're paying for nanny and nursery mm-hmm. right now. So the nanny money going out, and then just us being home. I'm working from home part-time.
Right.
Work at the office part-time, but, you know, the grocery bills are a lot higher, too.
Sure.
So, and I had kind of, like, mentioned that on and off to him, but not really given him numbers, so it made me realize we need to up our frequency of conversation, but, yeah.
All right. So, when you guys start thinking about college, I know it's probably already come up from a discussion standpoint. How do you talk about that for those of you who haven't had that conversation yet? I think this will be really helpful to think through. How do you prioritize education for kids and really yourselves, you know, because those are two really big ticket items.
Right.
Well, Trey's just going to get a full ride to Clemson.
Fair enough.
No, I'm just kidding. I think, you know, just it's definitely a high priority for us. Mm-hmm. And so what we've done is set up just a couple of investment accounts for Trey. That are specifically to be used for college. Like for example, any birthday money goes into this investment account to be used for college. Our goal is to fund college, but not take away from funding retirement. Retirement's a first priority, and saving for retirement's first priority. Second priority is college in that regard.
Right. Yeah. And I will say one cool thing that I'll share that my family has done. My family values education a lot. And one cool thing is my grandparents started an account for my mom. And then my mom used that for college, and she had a little bit left over. And then my parents used that to grow my brother and I's college fund.
Got it.
And then we both had a little bit left over. And that's so we have a couple different flows into Trey's custodial account. But that's one of the pieces that we've actually handed down from generation to generation.
Yeah.
So we do talk about, too, we want to make sure that Trey has at least a little bit left over from whenever he does choose to go to college so that he can continue that as well, because it's just kind of a special family seed that we've planted that I think we want to continue. So
that's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. So how do you have that conversation with grandparents? So I know a lot of people are going to ask this. You know, you get the first birthday and the second birthday where the kids get so much toys and stuff that you won't use or even know where all the parts are within 6 months. Did you guys have a conversation with your parents to say, hey, can we not do that and instead maybe fund this college account? Has that ever come up?
We haven't had that conversation yet, but I can see that conversation coming up.
Yeah.
Giving you an idea.
There's a lot of toys. A lot of toys.
I don't know if Rand's mom... We'll totally go for no toys.
Maybe half and half.
But maybe half and half. I think they'd be open to that.
Yeah,
but
maybe half and half.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Grancy loves buying toys.
Grancy loves buying toys.
Maybe you can send her this, and this will be the way you bring it out.
Yes.
Okay, is there anything else that you guys have found that you think our listeners would find helpful when it comes down to just avoiding conflict? Like, is there a... a time of day that's better to have this conversation, a day of the week. Like, have you ever thought about from that perspective?
Well, it's funny. So we actually just realized this earlier this month. When it's time to have the conversation, we have a code word.
And it's like a white flag.
It's like a safe word.
Yeah. And it's chit chat. So it's like, hey, like, can we sit down and have a chit chat? That means, hey, like we just want to sit down and just go through the finances. Doesn't mean
somebody is upset about something, or somebody doesn't like where money is going, or something like that. Which obviously those have to be conversations sometimes too.
Because sometimes when they say I want to sit down and talk about money, it's more of a defensive conversation to begin with. And so the code word chit chat is to say, okay, defense is off. This is just a pure conversation. Let's just make sure we're on the same page. Just knowing, and like for example, the one we had, Stacy was just like, hey, like, I don't want to do this now, but these are ideas that I have for the future of things that I think would be nice to purchase for the future. And it was cool because by having that code word of chit chat, then I'm not thinking, oh my gosh, like we can't do that now, you know, but I'm thinking, okay, that's cool. Like let's.
Because we didn't start out the conversation that way. And so Rand thought that I was upset which it makes sense because when I said I wanted to talk to him about basically what I had brought up was I was thinking about my family a lot. I was on furlough last week for my job, so I was thinking a lot. I was thinking about my family and just the things that I value that my family's passed down that I want to make sure that Trey feels and things like that. And my grandmother is an antique dealer, and my family is big on world travel. And so a lot of our furniture and things in our home have really special sentimental value, but they may not be inexpensive items. They really matter to my family, and it's a connection thing, and it's something that's important. And I was like, you know, I need to talk to Rand about this and just make sure he knows where I am, like emotionally with this. And I wasn't really thinking about the whole coronavirus time and all these investments that we're doing right now. And so he thought that I was saying like, why are we doing all these investments? I want to go buy antique tables. And so we started out a little tense, and then finally halfway through the conversation, I was like, we need to pause for a second. I'm not saying I want to do any of this now. I just want you to know that this is where my mind is, and this is kind of where my heart is. And we just wanted to be able to talk about it. But I think he also needed the affirmation of me saying, I'm okay with all this money that's going out right now for the next year or two and some of the things that we're investing in, because I agree with you. I just don't want you to forget where I am emotionally with some of this stuff long term. So that's kind of where we came up with it.
Oh, balance.
Yeah.
So this code word, is this something that's been relatively recent?
Yeah, within the last month, to be honest.
That's a really good idea. Yeah.
From our antique table conversation.
I really like that idea. Yeah. So when did you come up with that?
In that conversation, okay. We were just like, hey, we need to have a code word where it's like, hey, conversation, but it's not meant to be a defensive conversation.
So we're just sharing how we're feeling.
Yeah.
We're not accusing anybody of doing something.
Exactly.
I can imagine you probably started out thinking, yeah, the stock market's down.
He's like, we can't buy that stuff right now. And I was like, wait, what? No.
Okay.
This is so funny.
I'm going to write that down. A code word. All right. I like that. Okay. So I think that's a really helpful tip. You know, the one key point somebody told me way back when we first got married was don't ever have this conversation after a day of work. Because everybody's kind of
really
worn out,
point.
And it's a time of day where everybody's trying to decompress. You bring up something as emotional as money, it usually is not going to end well.
It's a really, really good
I've experienced
point.
I've made that mistake.
Yep.
It does not end well.
Yep. No.
It's a little bit better on a Sunday morning or a Saturday morning before anybody gets worked up for the day.
Yeah. Or do like a date night or something. You know, it's not necessarily a relaxing date night if it's something that's drawn out, but like, put a date night on the calendar.
Oh, wine.
The 4 hours at a wine bar sounds like the way to do it. I'm just saying.
That's the way we do it.
Yeah, it sounds like it could be even better. All right. Anything else that you guys think that would be helpful for people to kind of dive into at all? So I think this has been really good to talk through. And
I think one thing that gets us through, and this is partially our faith as well, but I think understanding when you go into marriage that you're a unit, this is your partner, you're not... you should never be working against each other, and you should always be trying to understand each other's perspective and understand that even if you're similar, we're both savers. Even if you're similar, your emotions aren't necessarily the same. It's a man versus a girl's perspective. Yeah. It's never going to be exactly in line. Or not a man and a girl, or whoever. But,
well, and I think too, is
whoever your partner is, just understanding that.
And understanding, too, if one of you is a spender and one's a saver, just understanding that dynamic is a big help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just knowing who your audience is.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. We're going to cut it here. There's a couple questions. Did Rand give you... Did he tell you the questions?
He told me some planners.
He told you the questions. All right. So I'm gonna switch it up a little bit. If there's anything in the world you could buy, regardless of how much it cost, what would it be?
So I would buy, I think one of the most valuable experiences I had in my life growing up was my grandmother took us on international trips every other year.
Okay.
So if we were able to do that for Trey, I think just the exposure to different cultures, different religions, different worlds is so valuable and so enriching. That's something that I would love to be able to do.
What would be your first trip to take him on?
Greece.
Mm-hmm. All right. What would be yours?
So I was thinking about this.
Can't say Greece. No.
So mine would be, through this stay at home, just having more things to do at home. I always grew up with a basketball goal in the driveway, and I would love to get an in-ground basketball goal in the driveway, because I used to always just shoot hoops at night or whatever. Yep. But that's one of those things where, you know, it's expensive, and I wouldn't purchase it now because it would just be me, but I want to purchase it whenever it's like, when it's me and Trey and can shoot together.
Get it broke in.
Yeah, yeah.
It might take that long to put it together.
That's not easy to do.
Right?
I'm not very handy.
That's a good point. We're going to have to hire somebody for that.
All right. Last one. Last two things you spent money on. Doesn't have to be big ticket items. Just last two things.
Curtains and curtain rods.
That's exciting.
But in this thrifty time of COVID, I guess we'll call it. When I was at home last week, I sold a bunch of old furniture I didn't want anymore, so I could buy new curtains and curtain rods.
So, oh, the savers right there.
Yeah. Disclaimer.
Yeah. Before you see that go out. Right? Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to stop it here, but I want to give you a little bit of an insight as to the next episode. So the next discussion that we'll have is going to be very similar to this, except it's going to be with a couple who have been married for, I believe it's over 30 years.
I might be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure that's where they are.
So we're going to have a different point of view after they've been through a longer marriage and their kids are out of the house. So hopefully you'll join us next time for that. If you have any suggestions, questions, or topics, or if you want to get in touch with one of our wealth coaches to talk more individually, you can find us on our website at fostervictorwa.com. You can also find us on Instagram at fostervictorwealthadvisors. Thanks for joining us. Hope you guys got something out of this. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Information contained in this podcast was intended for general use, not to be used as specific advice. For content tailored to your personal situation, please contact one of our wealth coaches.